Hi there, this is Mike Quinn, puppeteer creature performer from Star Wars Return of the Jedi, The Force Awakens, and The Last Jedi. Kind of like the only secondary character to have been in four Star Wars movies or more. And you're listening to The Sleeper Wire.
What do you see?
Light. Darkness. Balance
is so much bigger.
I only know one truth.
Order of the Sleeper Wire. I am Adam, your supreme leader for the next hour, but I am not the last Jedi. Nope, there is another, or two, or three. Guest number one from Sans Pants Radio, the host of Plumbing the Death Star, Joel Dushaw, over there in Australia. How you doing, Joel?
I'm doing so good. Look, just stoked to be here. Australia's really far away, so it's nice to be included for once.
And we also have the former host of ESPN and one of the former hosts of the Far, Far Away radio show, Brian Eikenberry. How you doing, Brian?
I'm doing fantastic in the sub-Arctic temperatures of Iowa in the middle of nowhere.
Finally, our guest of honor, Millennium Falcon pilot, one of the few people on the planet to be in both the old and the new Star Wars movies. Mike, here you go, hit that.
He was the co-pilot for Lando Calrissian. He fought the Empire and he won. And he won. How did he get the job? Was he the best or just the only one?
Brilliant. Thank you. I love it. Yeah, those guys are great. I love that. Thank you for playing that. That's fun.
We know who Nine Num is.
Nine Num. Yeah, you can say Nine Num, like number nine. Yeah, but yeah, that's okay.
But we don't know Mike Quinn. We don't really know you very well. Mike, we'd like to get to know you.
Well, thank you. You're not supposed to know me, really, because, you know, I'm a puppeteer and performer, and those guys are sort of hidden under puppets and creatures and piles of rubber and foam and fleece and fur and all that kind of thing. So as a puppeteer, generally, you don't want really to be seen or known. You know, it's the character that is famous and that people fall in love with, not really the boring old humans underneath or inside. So it's a good thing. And also, being a puppeteer, you're a lot more versatile. So, yeah, it's a good thing. I can do different characters. And it's a little harder sometimes for actors. Once your face is seen, you can't really play another character necessarily on the same project. So if you're doing voices, of course, you can often do multiple voices on a show, on a cartoon or something. But as a puppeteer, you can be anything. You know, you can have multiple characters on multiple episodes of the same series. It's great. So that's what I do.
I heard somewhere that you were puppeteering in the scene when Yoda passed away, and now you're passing your secrets of puppeteering on to the next generation?
That's right. Yeah. Basically, that's very true. I mean, when I started out, I kind of learned all my basics from people like directly from Jim Henson and Frank Oz around the time of The Great Muppet Caper, The Dark Crystal. They had workshops they gave us where they taught us a lot of stuff for The Dark Crystal. And of course, then assisting Frank Oz on things like Return of the Jedi with Yoda. I basically want to pass on that information to a new generation of puppeteers, of all the legacy of that performing knowledge that I was both taught and had learned over the last 36, 37 years of my work in film and television. So specifically, I'm opening up an online training academy called secretsofpuppetry.com, where people can enroll and learn how to be a film and television puppeteer.
Oh, wow. So that's secretsofpuppetry.com.
Yeah, secretsofpuppetry.com. At the moment, I'm sort of doing a pre-launch where people can kind of get in early because I'm still building out the course. I think right now 75% of the core training is done. I'm still finishing editing that and putting that up online. But people can kind of get in early and get a lifetime membership sort of now-ish, whereas when I do the full launch, when everything's up and fully built, then it'll be monthly and yearly. So, so for the privilege of getting in early, they can save a little bit of, they can basically become a lifetime member. And I have different levels of the academy too. So with the highest level being where they get one-on-one training monthly directly from me, which I think is kind of interesting. So they can actually have direct mentorship, which is exciting. Yeah.
Well, guys, thanks so much for being on. Before we talk about the movie, we're going to go through, we're going to spoil the movie, we're going to talk about it.
There's only one movie right now.
There's only one movie that we are talking about. It's not Baby Driver. It is Star Wars The Last Jedi. I'd like to start with a little bit of trivia, if you guys don't mind. I hope it's okay with everybody. I'd like our guest of honor, Mike, to go first.
All right.
Here's the first question. Who directed The Last Jedi?
Who directed it? Well, of course, that was dear old Rian Johnson.
Ding, ding, ding. Absolutely correct. Rian Johnson. And I saw a picture of you, Mike, on Facebook at the premiere next to Rian Johnson.
Yeah, we were pulling faces. It was really kind of fun. Rian was so excited. He's like, "Yeah, you made it! You made it into the Falcon. You survived. Everyone else died." And he was actually quite. I mean, you know, he was there, of course, when it happened. But he was excited that for me, I think that I get to live. You know, yeah, it was really fun. Ryan's a great guy. He's so great on set and such a lot of fun and. You know, I think he just did a masterful job with this second act. I think second acts are perhaps sometimes, you know, of a three-act trilogy, basically, can be probably the hardest thing to do because, you know, you've got to sort of pick up where all the setups left off. But then you've got to leave enough behind for JJ to fill in the gaps in the episode 9. Yet still have it be quite meaty and deep. And I think some of the stuff the way he handled some of the things in The Last Jedi, one that I told him when congratulating him at the premiere was I just felt he had a delicate touch to this film and to these characters. I really feel that.
I really enjoyed the movie. But next question, trivia. This is for you, Brian.
Oh, great.
Benicio del Toro was playing DJ in the film. What other Star Wars villain was Benicio del Toro cast to play?
Ooh, God, this sucks. I'm going to have to pass on this one. Like, I can't even go with this. Are you kidding me?
All right. It is, I'm going to tell you what it is. It's Darth Maul. He didn't take the role because it didn't have enough speaking lines. That's the rumor. So okay. My question is, did he have good things to say? What do you think?
No. I was super let down. So I was like excited for like the splicer aspect. But I mean, there's more to come. He's not done, right?
No way. And what I liked about DJ, his name, right? Don't join. It's written on the side of his thing on his head. So it clues everywhere. Joel, you're next. Yes. All right.
I am very stressed.
He only has softballs. Don't worry about it.
These are softballs. These are your softball questions. So here's your softball question. I got a bad feeling about that. It's in every single movie.
Except.
Yes.
Who said it in The Last Jedi?
Did someone say that in The Last Jedi?
Does anybody know?
I think I do know the answer to this. I'm pretty sure that I read somewhere that BB-8 says it. That is
correct.
Say that. I thought nobody said it in the last movie. How about that? I learned something tonight.
I'm glad I could help, Mike.
Thank you. I'm going to look. Well, we're going to see it tonight in IMAX. I'm going to listen out for that.
It's one of the very first lines of the movie. We're going to find out which one among you is actually a Star Wars fan and which one among you is just a Force hologram. So we're going to play a game, and this game is going to be pretty fast. It's called Star Wars or Marvel. I'm going to give you a name of a character, and I want you to tell me, is that character, well, actually two characters, which one is Star Wars, which one is Marvel, both owned by Disney. So, for example, if I say Captain America and Luke Skywalker, Captain America Marvel, Luke Skywalker Star Wars. Got it?
Now, yes. Are you going to refer to just the movies, or are you talking about animation and extended universe?
I only used the movies.
Okay, cool. Uh-huh.
All right. Mike, you're first.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Number one, here you go. Obadiah Stane or Elon Slezbogino?
So repeat those names.
Obadiah Stane and Elon Slezbogino.
Obadiah Stane. I've heard of that one. I haven't heard of the second one. Obadiah Stane. That's ridiculous. Both of them are ridiculous. I'm going to have to guess at this. Obviously, I'm not a fan of either of those characters, or I'd know who they were. So let me just go ahead and say Obadiah's got to be Marvel.
Yeah. Ding, ding, ding. You are correct, sir. You are correct. Yeah. Obadiah stays
it's
Marvel.
It's just not a Star Wars. It's just
nobody wants
Wars,
to buy
mate.
Death Sticks?
Good. Yeah. It's not a Star Wars name. You wouldn't call someone Obadiah from Star Wars. You just wouldn't do that.
All right. Brian, you're up next. Here's the names. Victor Von Doom or Salacious B. Crumb?
Woohoo!
Victor Von Doom is Marvel, man.
That is correct. Joel, you're up next.
Yes. Cool.
Big Bertha or Pruneface?
Ooh.
Whoa. I'm pretty sure that Big Bertha is Mom. Oh, wait, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. I should have just got. I'm just going to go with it. And
don't second guess yourself.
No, actually, I think I'm the wrong way around. I think Pruneface is Marvel.
You chose the wrong side.
That is incorrect.
Damn it.
Big Bertha is Marvel. Pruneface is Star Wars.
Mike, although I can understand the you know, I'm sure that in Australia there has been spotted both a Pruneface and a Big Bertha. So I could.
Yeah, that's just what we call our friends.
Yeah. All right, Mike, you're up next. Sabobola or Dazzler?
Yes, Dazzler's Marvels, so whatever is Star Wars.
Yeah. Yes, that is correct.
Thank you.
And Brian, we got Nort and Lobot.
Nort is Marvel. I thought these were hard.
Yeah. All right. So one more question, just to make it all fair, and then we're all done with trivia. And I'm having producer Steve keep score. Hopefully he'll tell me who won. But I don't want anybody to think I'm not being fair. So, Joel, I'll give you a last question to make it all even. You ever bought any Star Wars merchandise?
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So, here's my question.
I thought that was the question. Yes, you win. That's correct.
That's good. Here's the question. Which one of these is not Star Wars merchandise? All right?
Okay.
I got four of them. One of them is not. R5-D4, the Force, the Star Tours officer, or a Star Wars condom pregnancy combo pack called I Am Not Your Father?
Wow.
Go with the logic here.
Yeah. I'll just talk through my thought process here before I give an answer.
I love it.
So first of all, it was like, the Force, how would you sell the Force? Then when we got to the last one, I was like, who would have okayed that? So I'm going to, surely the last one is not official merchandise.
No!
The last one is something you can buy at stores. You can buy a blank like character pack with nothing inside that's labeled the Force. But it's not actually a real piece of merchandise. And then you can buy a box of rocks labeled Alderaan. I thought that was funny.
Oh, no.
That's bleak.
All right. Producer Steve, were you keeping score by any chance?
I was indeed. And 3 out of 3 was Mike. Yeah. Brian got 2 out of 3 and Joel got 1 out of 3.
Oh, man.
Third place.
Mike.
So bad.
All right, so
I got Mike, lucky.
I'm glad that you won because actually, I put something online and I asked some people. I said, I'm going to be interviewing Mike Quinn. Is there anything you want me to ask him? So,
oh, good. Yeah.
I got some questions from some fans who want to ask you some things. So, here's some questions. What happens in episode 9? Will Rey lead a new group of Jedis? Does Reylo happen? What's your blood type? I'm sorry. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding, Mike. Yes. Actually,
red. I'm red blooded. I'm blue blooded. Yeah.
Here was the real questions. They wanted to know what it was like being on the set of a Star Wars movie again.
Oh, it was horrible. I just hated every second of it. I thought, what's wrong with me? Why would anybody want to do this horrible thing with all these nasty people in this really bad film? No. It was just unreal. After all these years, I always did want to return to the character specifically, but you know, as a fan of these movies and of this galaxy, and these characters, just to be able to come back and play in that world again was just a gift. It's just amazing. To be back in with all the ships and the actual sets and props and the costumes, the guys over in the UK who make these, I think certainly are the best I've ever seen anywhere in the British film industry, for sure. The sets are, you can go up to them, you can be 1 foot away from what looks like a rusting piece of something or a leaky wall, and they look 100% real, and they are not. They're fiberglass, plastic, paint, whatever, you know. But they look real. It's just amazing. So it was just very surreal to be back. And every day I kind of had to pinch myself. It's like, am I really here? And then, of course, coming back as a legacy character, you're sort of the character is recognized by you know, the extras and some of the crew and even the new cast, the new actors who knew him from their old movies and stuff. And John Boyega, knew Nine Nun from playing, I guess he knew him from the other movies, from Jedi too, but also he played Nine Nun in Battlefront, so he was really excited to get a scene with me. You know, some of them had the toys when they were kids and stuff, so they're like, oh, there's that guy, I remember him, and then they don't always realize that I was also him in Jedi, and then they freak out again. So it's kind of like a nice extra thing to sort of be the old guy on set now instead of the new teenage kid, which I was during Jedi, you know. So it really is a wonderful, wonderful gift that I would say definitely keeps on giving, for sure. So I'm super grateful. Yeah, it's a lovely thing. I'm so excited. I can't wait to go back.
What did it feel like to see The Last Jedi?
Oh, it's same as the way it felt like to see The Force Awakens. You know, it's a secret that you kind of have to keep for a couple of years, essentially, from when we sort of first began working on this stuff. And so I can't tell anyone, you know, what I'm doing in there and what's happening. I can't reveal any of the plot lines or anything. So it's just like a long gestation period. It's just like being in giving birth, you know, so there's the whole anticipation for a year and a half to 2 years of growing this baby. And then I have to, you know, I know that the film's going to be great. I know that they're going to make it look as good as possible. I know I don't really have to worry about what I've done, and I have to trust that. But still, until the moment that I see it, I kind of get anxious and a little bit nervous, you know, just because I don't know what's going to be in there. Did I overact? You know, was I too big? Was I too small? You know, did I telegraph enough what I wanted the emotion to be? How was the performance? I have no idea. So until the film kind of begins, I'm sort of just on eggshells. I'm a nervous wreck. And then I'm carried along throughout the film, along with the story. And by the end of the film, I can actually exhale and breathe and relax. It's like, okay, the baby is born now, I'm good, you know. So that's kind of what it feels like watching it for the first time each time. So yeah, each, you know, and it'll be the same for episode 9, I'm sure.
And the final question from the fans, before we actually start talking about the movie,
the fans. I thought there was only one. Good.
They wanted to know if you had any Carrie Fisher stories.
Oh, well, not too much, really. Mostly, you know, saw around offset and stuff with Gary while we were waiting around in the golf carts outside the soundstage and things like that. But when you're on set, like, for example, in The Force Awakens, you know, I was in the Resistance base with her. I was placed next to her in that scene. And everybody, of course, the place was filled with extras, and we had all the sort of principal characters and old and new there. So there was some 5 cameras, I think, shooting on us, things like that. So there's a real focus in on keeping the noise level down, concentrating on the scene that we needed to do. Carrie was, you know, she'd sit on a little box in between takes and sort of go over her lines so that she could perform those when she needed to. So there was kind of like a respect. Everyone just kind of looks at each other knowingly on set and, you know, trying not to geek out, I think. It's crazy. So we sort of didn't really horse around and talk about the old days or anything like that, because it's sort of not really the, you know, appropriate in that sense. But we sort of give each other these sidelong sort of knowing glances and smiles, you know, which is quite nice. But she did great, actually, on that. And in fact, you know, a lot of the other actors, you know how they all kind of had like a line or two around that hologram there in the center. And I would say, I think even the new actors, there was kind of in awe and a little bit intimidated, even though they're all experienced actors. I think part of them was saying, oh my God, I'm in a Star Wars film. Oh, look, there's Harrison Ford and there's Chewie and there's 3PO. And I think when we shot that scene, I'm pretty sure that almost everybody at one point fluffed their line. And I think it's not like they had loads of complicated stuff to do. I think it was just, I don't know if it was nerves or what. The only person who didn't fluff a line was Harrison Ford. But on The Last Jedi in the Falcon there, it was really nice because Daisy and Carrie were sat next to each other, you know, in the Falcon there. And in between takes, they were just kind of like doing a little song together, swaying back and forth and singing some little duet together. It was really sweet.
Oh.
So, yeah. So that's a nice memory that I have. That's my last memory of her, in fact. So
That's a good nice memory.
Yeah, yeah.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to go over some, I'm going to try to paint the picture with the plot points, and then I'm going to stop, and then I'd like to kind of discuss it with you guys on what you saw there, what you thought about it, and kind of talk about the movie, if that's cool with you guys.
Let's do it.
Yeah, sick. Count me in.
All right. So we had the opening scene with Poe, just like we had the opening scene with Force Awakens with Poe, and the first attempt is Star Wars cell phone humor, magnetic bomb. So that first scene all happened. What did you guys think about it opening with Poe and everything that happened?
So to me, hey, so this is Brian. So to me, I think I ruined the vibe in the theater, because when he started doing it, I was like the only person who started laughing out loud. I kind of did a couple of chuckles and everything. And I kind of looked around and nobody's laughing. Everyone's just like locked in, because this is the first, here we are. I mean, this is it. You've been waiting 2 years for this. And then you got this yuckity yuck in the audience just laughing at it, like enjoying the movie. But no, it was fun. It was a good crack. That gave me the image of who I thought Hux was. You know, if you know his backstory, you know, his father kind of ushered him through and kind of drug him along underneath Supreme Leader. So he really hasn't earned it to be there. You know, he's got the rank, but he doesn't have the salt to kind of be that general. And you see that on screen right there. To me, that's what that scene was really all about, was saying, even though he's a general, he doesn't have the licks, you know, he doesn't have the ribbons to be here. So yeah, that's to me anyways.
That's like super good. I was the same. Like, the whole theater was so tense when the film started, because everyone had just like super locked into the fact that, like, oh my God, a new Star Wars film. And then, yeah, the moment that they had the joke, I was like, this is the best. I'm so happy. But also, like, I love Oscar Isaac. So like just seeing or hearing him is just pleasant all the time.
And then the next scene, we see Luke with the lightsaber, chucks it right over his shoulder. Kylo sees the Emperor, and Luke drinks the blue milk. What'd you guys think?
I was so on board. Like, the moment Luke threw his lightsaber over, I was like, oh, okay, cool, all bets are off. every fan theory that anyone's ever had about like The Last Jedi, it's going to be totally wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree completely with everything Brian and Joel are saying.
I remember when we've ended our Force Awakens episode and everybody was speculating, what's Luke going to say? And the consensus was, it better be some boss stuff that he says. Like, it better be an awesome line. So I thought it actually said more to have him throw it over his shoulder and walk away. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, surprises are always good. The unexpected is a good thing. You don't want the audience to predict everything, that's for sure.
So this scene for me, especially the blue milk scene, it was kind of one of those where in the beginning, it's like, what is the point of this? Like, come on. But when you watch it the second time through, you realize that he is, everything he does on the island in front of Rey is to break that image of the legend. And here's your legend, milking a sea cow and drinking from it. This is how I live, you see? This isn't a legend. And he even makes that gesture towards her. So, you know, the second watch really kind of explained a lot of these things for me. As you're kind of catching them in awe, you're able to come back and say, oh, okay, this is why he's doing it this way. This is why he's kind of, you know, just being a jerk right now, because he's not the legend, as he says numerous times. And he's showing her this is not how a legend lives.
Yeah, that's a very good point. It's not in your face. They're not spelling it out for you with dialogue. They're just kind of letting it play out and letting you discover that as a viewer at the same time that Rey is discovering that. Yeah, good call.
Yeah, you can't always be the plucky hero. It was what I thought.
I also just really like that it made Star Wars real weird again. Like, because like when A New Hope came out, like people were like, what? Like, because Blue Milk and Tatooine, obviously, and A New Hope and stuff like that. And then, like, The Force Awakens is great and everything, but it's like the audience was like ready for what they saw.
Yeah.
The Last Jedi, things like that happened, and people were like, what? I love that scene so much.
Yeah,
I can talk about Blue Milk all day.
Well, we're going to move on to Poe getting his head out of his cockpit and the bridge exploding and Leia flying through space in what, my first viewing, I was sure was the end of Leia in that movie. Right?
I think everybody did. We kind of watched it in a group of about 10 guys. And, you know, it was always like, well, how's this going to be handled? You know, this is a big deal. What's happening? And then I kind of looked over, I'm like, well, that answered that. And then we didn't even think about it. Like, you see her in the trailer way after that point. So I didn't even think about it at the time. It's like, oh my God. Nope, just kidding.
I mean, I think it did fool a lot of people at the time. They thought, oh, this is how they're going to do it. Oh, no, that's terrible. But, I mean, I do remember reading that Lucasfilm had specifically said they were going to keep everything that they intended in that movie in the film. So I knew that, okay, her footage is safe, and that wasn't how she was going to die. But I guess a lot of people didn't get that memo.
We have the old hologram, and at the end of this act, Finn tries to escape and meets Rose. And I thought this was really interesting because Rose had this idea of who Finn was. Finn the hero, Finn the resistance fighter. And she goes to find out he's a normal person who just, you know, he's looking out for himself and his friends. So I thought that was a kind of an underlying theme of the whole movie that Rose just discovers.
I suppose so, in a way. I mean, except Finn still was a hero because of what he was actually doing both then and flying to cannon, you know, later on. I mean, I guess it's saying that you know, we're regular people and we can still be heroes too. That's sort of what I read into that.
Yeah.
You know, we're not people like that are not sort of superhero. They're just regular guys, and you can still make a difference. Basically, I thought Rose was fantastic. I really liked her development. You know, and she was beautifully performed, I thought, as well.
I agree. I liked Rose's character a lot. And as a matter of fact, the next thing we talk about
the island then. Was anyone else upset that Chewie did not eat the Porg? I mean, come on, just rip into it, man. Let's do this.
I'm sure they thought about that. You know, they might have even shot something, I don't know, and then thought, oh, perhaps not. You know, it might be something that was resolved in the edit. They may have shot it two ways. It would have maybe they didn't want Chewie to be unsympathetic, you know. But, yeah, I mean, I think he could have, you know, it's already dead. He could have eaten into it and stuff, but it might have been a bit callous, perhaps, you know. It's a tough one, that.
I definitely braced myself for Chewie to eat it. It seemed very Chewie-like to do so.
So there's one deleted scene that I'm aware of that I kind of read into, since we're dealing with spoilers, and it's really about the caretakers. And I thought it was kind of interesting. I read up on the deleted scene where Rey and Luke are looking out over the island, and they see this group of raiders coming into the village to capture some of the caretakers, and she wants to go kind of fight them. And Luke kind of explains, well, no, if a Jedi interferes, there will be more raiders coming back and take all of them. Hmm. And this is why the Jedi must end. This is why we can't interfere. And it was a cool, I just reading it, it's like, oh my God, this makes so much sense, because he's showing her, no, here's why the Jedi can't just get involved, because it's the right thing to do. It may not be the right thing to do, because if we do interfere, there'll be more raiders who come back who wipe them all out. This way, sacrificing a few saves everybody. I thought that was kind of a cool perspective.
The next thing, Poe calls Maz, who has the best cameraman ever, and Luke agrees to three lessons, and Rey finds the books. That's the next scene.
I guess with, like, the books is kind of a cool thing, because there'd been a lot of speculation with, because they're shown in one of the trailers of, like, oh, does this mean Luke's a gray Jedi? That logo is taken from, I'm pretty sure,
the Wills.
Yeah. Which led to a lot of speculation of, like, what the books are going to mean, like, what Luke had been doing. And it was kind of cool to see them introduced. And at this point in the film, it's still not entirely sure which way it's going to go. And, like, I don't want to jump too ahead, but the way that they dealt with, again, was something that pleased me greatly. Because, Ryan Johnson was, like, clearly aware of what everyone thought was going to happen, and didn't do that.
Okay, and then we are at the Canto Bight scene.
Yeah, Canto Bight was one of those things for me. Again, it's kind of, things aren't always what they seem. Kind of going through the hero and Finn and this, you know. Finn is seeing things through a normal guy's eyes, getting taken up by the glamour. And, you know, the whole look deeper, you know, behind the beauty, there's always pain and suffering kind of a deal. But I liked how, you know, they were all against it and all these rich people are bad. But then when DJ is on there going through the ship's records, and he goes, he also sold to the rebellion. And then you kind of see their faces change, because they're like, yeah, we stole this guy's ship and he's such a bad guy. He's selling to the Empire. Oh, crap. He's playing both sides. So that was a kind of nice little gut punch back to the heroes and the heroine of that moment.
I like the Canto Bight scene. I'm hearing a lot of people saying, why wasn't Lando in the Canto Bight scene? Mike, why?
Because it would have been a waste for him. I agree. He deserves better than that.
I agree. You know what I think? Here, I'm going to throw this out there. I think Lando is Finn's daddy. That's what I think.
Oh. That whole scene to me was, you know, people say, oh, it was just silly with the horse racing and, you know, who cares? But it really, to me, wasn't about that, of course. It was really about their character development together. It did push the storyline forward, and it introduced the kids. It was a great way to introduce the slave kids.
Yeah, and it was like 9 minutes long. So it wasn't a big part of the movie at all. And I thought it said a lot for such a short time. And here, I don't know if you know this, so I'm going to ask you all these questions, Mike, and you can tell me or not.
Yeah.
Was Warwick Davis the little guy in in that scene where he's hitting BB-8? Was that Warwick Davis?
He was one of the costume characters. He wasn't obviously the guy putting the coins in the slot, because that was CG. But he was one of the other costume characters in there, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. So we're moving on to the next scene, and that is Rey sees the dark crystal mirror. I thought this was really good. This is the first time I've watched Star Wars and really had a deeper spiritual understanding of it. Maybe it's because I'm older, whatever the reason.
Definitely.
big light, big darkness. And then we start seeing the connection between Rey and Kylo.
It was nice because they were showing you what was behind her, but also what was in front of her, too. You know, literally, there was her past and her future.
Wow, how so?
Because of all the pre-reflections and post-echoes, you know, that she had in there.
That's actually a really good analogy. I never thought about it that way. Because even Maz tells her, back at Maz's place, why are you always, what you're looking for is right in front of you.
Yeah.
And that makes total sense with the Force connection, which I don't know if you guys watch Star Wars Rebels, the cartoon, but you know, Force connection was in there. Ezra and Maul were connected over a holocron, and Maul used to peer in to Ezra. So I thought that was nice. It wasn't brand new to me. Like, wait a minute, why does this exist now? You know, that was always something that was there. And even back to the hyperspace tracking, something that I didn't get a pitch in there. Hyperspace tracking was actually mentioned in Rogue One.
Yes, that's right. You're correct, actually, that they foreshadowed it there.
Yeah, those nice little tie-ins.
Clever, very clever.
Something I did like a lot was this idea of Kylo and Luke kind of squaring off. No, Ben Solo, we will talk about later. What I did like was this idea of a certain point of view. It seemed like Kylo had his point of view and Luke had his point of view. And that's very Star Wars to me.
It was great. And they would reveal different bits to us at different times as we needed. You know, it was a great way of unfolding, you know, making us think one thing and then saying, actually, this happened. No, actually, this happened. It's kind of cool, actually, to be messed with like that by the filmmakers. I love it.
Yeah, that was great. We see this a chemistry between Rey and Ben, right? And it's definitely a chemistry. And it feels like she thinks she can save him. That's at least the feeling I got. What did you guys think with these whole back and forth scenes between the two of them?
Yeah, I mean, I got the same thing. The film makes it pretty obvious. Rey says it a lot that, yeah, she's like, there's still good in Ben. There's still good in Ben. There's still good in Ben. Like, and even like she actually makes reference to Luke with Vader being like, everyone said that Anakin Skywalker was well and truly dead, but you still saw the good in him. So she's kind of drawing parallels between herself and what Luke did. But then Luke was like, yeah, but like what I did clearly meant nothing because the dark side still exists.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, you know, a well-crafted script, or in this case, trilogy of scripts, they will not reveal everything to us now. You know, a good story will only tell you what you need to know when you need to know it, and they will withhold information from you. So they like making you think one thing and then actually having it be another. So I think right now, while we can sort of assume and hope that things might go in one direction, it could still be anybody's guess at this point, with the way they're going. You know, I wouldn't put money on anything at the minute.
No, especially the way The Last Jedi went, like,
yeah.
Who knows?
I mean, love that. I think it's brilliant.
Let's talk about expectations going awry, because the next four scenes, we have Yoda, Snoke, and Rey's parentage all going completely awry from what every fan theory was. What did you guys think of that?
Oh, I was so behind it, personally. I thought it was, I just loved... Just, I mean, there may be more to Snoke later. We may find out something else. But I sort of didn't really care who he was personally, you know. We didn't really know who Vader was at the beginning either, and we didn't care about that. It's just, oh, he's the bad guy. So I think there was a lot of stuff that got built up around Snoke that people wanted to see in their minds, and some were disappointed when that didn't happen. I really liked Snoke in this. I liked him a lot more in this movie than the last. I didn't care much for him really in The Force Awakens because he was just a distant CG hologrammy guy. But I really liked what they did with him in this movie, and I enjoyed the performance and the character, and I enjoyed him being put away the way he did as well. I thought it just got down to business and we got to move on with the film. To me, it was very satisfying personally, as far as Snoke goes. Because Yoda was amazing. Going back to a hand puppet again was fantastic. I loved it.
After the like these three scenes in a row, I was like hoping the movie would just like pause for a bit so I could just like have a lie down and just like come to terms with everything I'd just seen.
Wow, yeah. Yeah.
So for me, it was total heartbreak. I mean, seeing Snoke cut in half, I wanted so much more. So I just, why was he taken from us? You know, I'm the guy in the theater who's upset when the bad guys get killed.
Yeah.
I'm like, no.
Yeah.
But the fight scene was cool with the Praetorian guards. That was fun. That was a much needed battle, you know, to get some aggression out that you've been building up through the film. So that was fun. They just really kind of rammed everything down. And also, I was the guy who laughed when Kylo's like, You know who your parents are. Just say it. They're nothing. You're nobody. I'm the guy who laughed in the theater because that was hilarious.
I thought it would have been too easy for Snoke to fill the Palpatine role. I mean, we already have like a Vader-esque character in Kylo, and he's all about killing the past. And here's something that somebody mentioned. They said, how important is a character? Take Snoke out of the story, and the story still remains the same.
Nice.
So he's basically a giant Snoke screen.
Look at you.
At least the most badass scene in the movie where they fight those guards, right? That scene is amazing.
Well, what's nice is you start to think, okay, these guys are working together at long last. That, you know, they've resolved that issue and they're going to help each other out. And then it's like, no, they're not. It's great. But you also get a glimpse of what could be as well. You know, we actually get teased and shown here. These two could actually work together and be in some sort of harmony. And it was sort of nice to enjoy that for a moment and then have it whipped out from under us again. It's great.
Yeah,
well, yeah. It's the first time we've seen like two Jedi fight side by side together in ages.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah,
the one fun part, you know, when I had read where, you know, this is truly the older generation passing it off to the young for the audience, you know, where you really kind of get your kids pulled in. So my kid's 5, right? So I'm that guy who brings his 5-year-old into a very violent movie, like, hell yeah, let's do this, pal. But at the Yoda scene, and when it started going and it scenes Yoda's head, I mean, he jumps out of his seat and goes, Master Yoda, really loud and yells. And it's totally like, oh, man, this was so cool. Wow. So that was a good, like, family moment between me and my boy where, you know, he's getting this big reaction where he's not, you know, he's not cued. I'm not telling him it's coming. It's completely just him watching the movie and just being super excited and jumping up. So that was pretty cool just on a personal level.
That is cool.
That is very So moving on to the end of this scene where Rey tells Kylo to leave with him, and Kylo looks at her and says, baby, you know I've always been Solo.
Funny, I don't remember that.
So then Finn is betrayed, and Phasma's armor actually does something more than just shine armor. It deflects a laser, and BB-8 drives a walker, and then we have what might be the most beautiful scene in Star Wars history, right? With the ships flying out.
Yeah. So let's do Phasma's armor first. So I had to explain to a lot of people, they were calling BS on it, but her armor was made from Palpatine's ship off of Naboo, the big shiny one. That's where her armor comes from. So that's why it could deflect lasers like that. But we'll see her again. I'm sure we don't see a dead body, so she's coming back. I'm hopeful. She's a badass, and I wanted to see more and more and more. So hopefully she finally kills Finn next movie.
Jeez.
Interesting.
I really like the fight between Finn and Phasma, even though it's like brief. It's like really well shot, looks great, it's exciting. I know a lot of people again were like, Phasma got the short end of the stick, but it's the same. I feel the same way about her as I do with Snoke. Like, the film still works without her, so to just like, if this is the end of her, I'm totally fine with that. It was a cool final fight, and it showed Finn still means business.
Yeah, that's true. Phasma was. She is kind of a two-dimensional character, though, isn't she, right? I mean, she doesn't really have any sort of development or depth. She just hates him, and she enjoys her job, and that's it, right? There's nothing else to her, right? We don't know what she has for breakfast or whether she wears, thongs or knickerbockers. We don't know anything about her. So, she is what she is. How far can you go with her, really, you know?
Less than 100 rebels survive. I know. You're going to get your cracker in just a second, honey.
Aw.
They're on the planet. Finn tries the kamikaze, and you've got my favorite line in the whole movie. You got that clip for me, Steve?
Blow that piece of junk out of the sky!
I love it when they call the Millennium Falcon a piece of junk. It happens in every movie.
Yeah.
So then they try to laser Luke. He just dusts it off. And Luke battles Kylo. What'd you guys think of all of that?
I'll happily throw myself out there for this one. So with this scene, just a bit of backstory and why the scene. yeah, like I've had a lot of thoughts about this. So I actually, apart from podcasting, I work at a movie theater, which means that because this is towards the end of the film, I've seen it a lot. And every time I see this scene, it gets sadder and sadder and sadder. It's so heartbreaking. Like when I first saw the film, I was like, oh, okay, like it's a, like a bit of a fake out with Luke sacrificing himself, but then he does actually die. I was like, that's kind of weird. But then like actually watching it, just that scene again, a second time, I was like, oh no, I get it. I get it. And like the see you around kid line. Oh, it's also good. It's just so good.
Yeah. I noticed the first time when I watched it, I didn't catch that his foot didn't scrape off the white salt and or reveal the red underneath. But the second time I did catch that.
Yeah, and even stuff like the fact that his beard is a totally different color.
Yeah,
and his
of course,
he's got a haircut and he's using a lightsaber that is currently broken. It's like
there is that.
There was a lot signs there.
Am I the only one who thought he looked like Chuck Norris?
Yes.
With his pristine beard and nice short hair. I'm like, this is Chuck Norris. This is going to be awesome. You know, but you get the good. But I like it how Kylo, so I'm you know, I'm the bad guy. I loved Kylo's reaction because, you know, Kylo is such a deep character for me. I think he's very powerful. He's one of my favorite characters in this whole thing. People don't like him. He's a whiny brat, blah, 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 blah.
Right, but great.
I think he's awesome because this shows his imbalance and his just pure hatred.
And
he's
that's what makes him dangerous. Exactly.
Yeah. Fire every gun we have right in just go.
See, that's the thing. He has a lot of power. Yeah.
And he has taken control. You know, he is proving that this is my first order now, and I am going to rule this with an iron fist and just be absolutely brutal. So I was looking at those kind of points throughout that film. I was mad that Rose, I'm like, oh my God, Finn's going to go out. We're going to lose a major character. This is going to be awesome. And then, you know, here comes Rose and just bang, dang it, Rose.
This is the end of the movie. We have Luke dies with the twin sons. The books are on the Falcon.
That was neat.
And Kid forces Broom. So this is how the movie ends with you, a survivor, Mike, at the very end.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. There was such debate when we were shooting this stuff because, some people was when I was over there, some of the performers were saying, I'm not sure that you were going to survive, and I didn't want to be the one to tell you that you were going to die. And I'm saying, no, I think I live. And we're all standing around trying to figure out who was actually flying the Falcon. So who's flying it? You're not flying it. Who's flying this thing? So we couldn't figure that out at one point. You know, it's all very disjointed, of course, when you film the stuff. But the one thing I would like to say that I was so excited about when we were filming was we actually shot all, the best part of a day running through the caves, trying to escape. And we had all these tunnel sets and caverns, and they were twisty and turny and small and dark and rocks. And I fell over and busted my knee in the middle of a take. It was very embarrassing. But anyway, I was actually positioned behind 3PO and in front of Rose being carried on a stretcher. And you don't really see any of that stuff in the final film. They just kind of cut it out, I think, for time and expediency and to keep it kind of nebulous. It's almost like they deliberately obliterated who was behind Poe, really, so that, they didn't have to explain who was left and who wasn't at that point in time. They kind of kept it a bit vague. But the exciting thing for me was, we started rehearsing this, the initial wide shot of us running through, and I saw that some of the rebel guys had these nice big blasters, and I thought, some of my toys have nice big blasters, and in the games he sometimes has nice. So I went up to Ryan Johnson and said, hey, can I carry a blaster? Would that be all right? I've always wanted one. He just like looked at me and laughed and said, yeah, sure, you can. So the prop guys came over and gave me one of those nice big ones with a laser light on the front. And I got to run like an action hero finally. So I was just so excited. I got to be a real Star Wars rebel for real, you know. But it was cut. So I'm hoping that there might be some extra footage or stills or something. But I was super excited about that. But yeah, being making it on the end was on the Falcon was a lovely thing, actually. Just, well, to be back on the Falcon for one thing. It's the Falcon is pretty well one of my favorite characters in the Star Wars movies herself. So. And Finn was all excited, of course. I was trying to crack him up during the takes because I was just making stuff up. You know, there wasn't any real dialogue. We were improvising stuff. We shot close-ups as well that they didn't, you know, need to use. Because if they show one close up of us two, then they got to do it with everyone else, and it just kind of doesn't work. So they kind of held that mostly in a right at the end in a sort of a wide vignette shot with us all together. But yeah, I was trying to crack Finn up, trying to crack John up by saying stupid stuff, and sometimes I got him to laugh during the take, so that was kind of good. So it's nice though; it's good to have fun like that. But yeah, it's there's not many of us left now. Nah, it's kind of weird. And in fact, at the premiere, when we were talking with Rian Johnson about all that, he said, "Yeah, when I finished, JJ said, all right, who have I got left?" Knowing that he's going to have now to write and direct, you know, episode 9, he wanted to know who he had to work with. So I hope that means that I get some dialogue and some more action stuff and a couple of comedy lines here and there and fly some ships. I hope they give me some more stuff to do in this next one, because I'm ready for it, let me tell you.
Up your demands, ask for 2 blasters in the next film.
2 blasters. I would like to fly a couple of ships. Yeah, well, yeah, that's true. But at least, if nothing else, it can lead to a damn the Black Series figures, right?
Yeah, and I mean, you gotta do a shirtless one. You gotta do a shirtless scene with the double blasters and just rah, that'll be perfect.
We could do that. I don't know what he would look like shirtless, but we could do that. Yeah, in slow motion. Yeah. It's crazy though. It's crazy to think, you know, that will mean. I was trying to work out how many characters have been in four Star Wars films or more, and I could only come up with 10, including myself, with the other 9 being principal characters, and mine's, you know, a secondary character. So I'm kind of like the only secondary character to have been in four Star Wars movies or more. So that's kind of a weird thing to think about.
R.I.P. Admiral Akbar, right?
Yes, indeedy. Poor guy. Yes, that was a bit sudden.
This brings us to the end. Before we get into our final thoughts, I'm hoping you guys listening out there can take a second to listen to why we do this. The entire reason for doing Sleeper Wire, doing the entire show, doing the Star Wars show, bringing Mike on. He was generous enough to come on. As we do this for Rob. We do this for Lyme disease. We are a recognized charity. You can learn more about us at www.sleeperwire.com. And if you want to donate to our cause, it's right there on the website. Or you can go to gofundme.com/robjr. We have an entire episode that talks all about Lyme disease. It's his father talking about it. I implore you to listen and give if you can.
That's great. Yeah, I'll actually go and listen to that as well. Thank you. Yeah.
All right. So we're going to get into some final thoughts. And I know that we have some final thoughts, but I also have some other people's final thoughts. And I kind of want to play. I have 3 of them that I want to play. I think they're all really interesting. The first one is from Kevin Smith.
First time I sat there and watched that movie is one of the best times I had in a movie theater in the last year, if not the last 5. 10 years. And the second time I watched, I still had a good time watching it with my buddy.
Best time he's had in a movie theater in the last 5 years is what Kevin Smith said about watching The Last Jedi.
Wow.
I wonder what was his favorite time before that The Last Jedi didn't quite top.
Yeah.
And another guy that I have here that I thought was really great, this guy is called the Black Nerd. I really like him a lot. He talks about nostalgia goggles.
Oh. I'm pretty sure there's going to be some hardcore Star Wars fanboys that are not going to like this movie because some characters are not going to do the things they thought they were going to do. Some storylines are not going to go the way they thought they were going to go. Their fan fiction is completely ripped up and shredded and burned. And to that I say, who needs your 3D glasses when you got your nostalgia goggles? I enjoyed it, but what I really respect about it is it's a movie that made me think. And it's a movie that I want to see again because it made me think so much. And that is not something I would have expected from Star Wars.
Yeah.
Do we agree?
That's cool. Yeah. Yeah, that guy's kind of interesting, isn't he? I'll have what he's having.
Did this movie make you think?
Yeah, a little bit. But I don't want to think too much. I think when I'm not watching movies. So I just want to be carried along in the moment, you know, and be removed from my life for a few hours. Yeah, just enough, but not too much. Yeah.
That's perfect. The last clip I have actually Adam Driver talking
yeah.
about Kylo.
But I don't, I mean, this is such an actory thing to say. I don't think of him as evil. I think of him as someone who thinks he's right as opposed to someone who thinks he's evil.
Well, don't all evil people think they're right?
Sure, but I don't think that they think they're evil. I think they're right. They think that what they're doing is morally justified. So sure. There's no end to what they'll do to make sure whatever agenda they have is being pushed, I think, in my experience. Someone who's just evil or for the sake of it, that doesn't seem to have a shelf life to me. People who I find evil or unpredictable or scary are always just, they think they're right. They feel like they're morally justified to do what they're doing, and they're incapable of hearing the other side.
Do you consider yourself the hero of your own story?
Sure. I think he does, yeah.
No, I mean you, Adam Driver, life? Yeah, yeah.
No.
Really?
Yeah, I feel like I'm barely hanging on.
Yeah, spot on. I completely agree. Adam is absolutely 100% right. That is the only way that you can play a character like that. You can't think. There's no way that character would ever think that he is evil. He thinks he's actually doing the right thing. I've played bad guys in the past as well, in a short film and on stage in a play. I was a murderer, an English murderer, typecasting as usual. But to make that work, to me, I was the smart guy. You know, my character was the clever one. He was the one who outsmarted everyone else, and he was above them all, and he was doing mankind a favor. You know, he was doing the right thing. He didn't see himself as a bad guy. And if you're trying to create a three-dimensional character that is real to the audience, that makes perfect sense and is completely logical, you have to find a way to make it perfectly logical to yourself. It has to be real to you. It can't be fake, phony, you know, cartoony. You have to find a magical logic that makes sense. It's like, well, of course I would kill these people or I'd do these things because the A, B, and C, and D. And there has to be a logic to it. Then there's a flow and a reality, and it makes the character real. So Adam is completely spot on with that.
Yeah, this is the first time I felt that Star Wars has a subtext over action. Yeah. And I felt that Adam Driver really brings depth to that character.
Yeah.
I like Kylo a lot.
Yeah, me too.
Did you get to talk to Adam Driver much? Because he just seems like he'd be the most interesting person.
Yeah, no. No, because we never had any scenes together yet. I would love that. I would love that. I think he's fantastic. Yeah, that would actually be a wish for the next one. So maybe. Who knows? But yeah, he's awesome.
Well, you can talk to him about... I'm sorry to cut you off, Joel.
Oh, no, it's okay. All I was going to say is, like, I've loved him for, like, ages, and seeing him... Oh, same with Oscar Isaac, actually. Seeing both of them come together in a Star Wars film, I was like, it's like they've made this just for me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and Oscar's such a sweetheart as well. He really is a dear man, so...
Ah, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
I heard that there was a time in Adam Driver's life where he had to make out with three girls every single day because he was in three separate plays, and he had a girlfriend, and in those plays, he had to make out with a person in each one of them.
Oh, that's see, hilarious. I just thought he was telling a story when he was in Okinawa, because he's a Marine, right? So, and that's what we do on weekends.
That's hilarious. Yeah, well, that might be as well. That's brilliant.
I don't normally ask people to rate the movies, like, give me your best to your worst. Instead, what I try to do is I try to ask, if you were to compare this movie, and we're going to get into final thoughts here, but if you were to compare this movie to a Star Wars character, what character would this movie be?
All right, I'll jump in. I got an answer straight off the bat. It's Kylo Ren.
That's
kill
a good
the
answer.
Past.
Why? Why? Kill the past. That's great.
Brian?
Yeah, geez. You know, this is kind of going to be my R2 movie. This is going to be, even though he's not in it, I think the character is, for me, this movie gave you a lot of tools to use in the rest of the trilogy, right? So it kind of filled some bits in, but it kind of, I don't know, hard to explain, but you know, he's got the tools, and that's what this movie was, is it served a purpose to give you some tidbits on where this is going, to kill the past, and then to give you some ideas on where we're going. So I think, you know, where at the end of The Force Awakens, there were 1,000 different ideas of where this was going. I think at the end of this movie, there's only a few ideas of where this is going. It's not going to be how it was. So this really gave you the tools to come up with a clear path on where we're going through this.
Yeah, and I think that's very well said. I mean, my first thought was Yoda, but kind of for the same reasons that Brian just explained, I think. He wasn't quite what he seemed, you know. When you see Percy Yoda, you think he's this crazy little old guy who's going to be a gag character and he's going to be gone in 5 minutes. But there's actually so much more to him, both in his past and in the future as well. And in a way, you know, that sort of fits that middle act of the trilogy as well. Yoda was definitely an enabler and a pivotal character for transitioning for Luke, essentially, just like this movie is. I sort of draw those parallels pretty much for the same reasons Ryan just said, I think.
Before we go, I have a couple final thoughts, but do you have any final thoughts on this movie or anything that you want to say?
One thing that I'm just absolutely, when it comes to episode 9, just one thing I want to make sure happens. I just really hope that the series continues on the path that The Last Jedi set out, and they don't try and go back on some of the more controversial parts, if that makes sense. I don't want to this is what happened from a certain point of view kind of thing. I just want all right, Last Jedi happened and exactly what happened, episode 9. Oh, actually, Snoke was this guy and Rey's parents are actually these people and stuff like that. Just this movie was so good and I don't want them to try and change any of it just because of some fans not being super stoked on some of the decisions.
Yeah,
I agree. One thing I really liked about this was this idea of gray Jedis. Morally ambiguous Jedis. You could have some good and some bad. I thought that was really cool. Something else I'm hearing a lot of is the more somebody sees this movie, the more they're liking it. So I also like that.
Yeah, so true. Yeah, in fact, some people have been doing a complete 180 on it. It's like, I really didn't like it the first time, but I went again and I actually liked it the second time. Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, very. All right, so... Mike, Secrets of Puppetry again.
Secrets of Puppetry, okay. Well, yeah, I mean, basically, I've got a big picture, sort of the 30,000-foot view is this is the first of sort of three stages of world domination for puppeteers. So this is sort of the big, this basically breaks down how the techniques and mindset to become a very proficient professional puppeteer for film and television. There's not really been anything like this available before. When I started, there was absolutely nothing anywhere. I had to partially teach myself and make mistakes on set, you know, which are on film now forever for everyone to see. So this breaks down everything from ground zero. So if you've never ever done any puppets before and you don't even know what a puppet is, this kind of really tells you even just how to stand, you know, how do you do this without getting tired? What's the difference between a rookie performance and a master performance? You know, how do you get there? And I break everything down, all the techniques. And this has been used in actual live workshops that I've given as well in the past. So I know it works. And how to use monitors, just all how to use arm rods, just how to do different kinds of lip sync, different kinds of puppeteering as well. And we'll go into animatronics a little bit as well later. Acting voices, characters, working on set, working on location, all these kind of different things. But I'm really breaking it down step by step. So I'm really excited about that. Academy, I guess. This first part of this is how to physically do the performing, how to do that, and how to do it well. And then I'll release a second course, which will be how to design, create, and build your own puppet characters. So for those who really, there's a lot of people that just want to build their stuff as well, so they can create their own guys, you know, that they own, that they've designed, that they resonate with. Their own cast of characters. So that would sort of be a second leg. And the third one would be now that you've learned how to perform, how to puppeteer, and how to create your own puppets, how do you turn that into a business? How do you actually make that into a career? How do you monetize that? And again, that's something that nobody's doing. So to me, that was sort of the missing piece. You know, it's all very well teaching people how to puppeteer or how to dance or how to play a musical instrument or whatever, but how do you actually make that into a satisfying career, satisfactory career? So that's the final nut that I think needs to be cracked, and I will have to demonstrate that in that third academy, essentially, or the third leg of that academy. So that's really sort of the big picture of where I'm headed. That's probably a few years away, that part of it. But I'm just really excited about it because it's sort of a culmination of almost 37 years of doing this now across, you know, commercials and TV series, going from analog to digital, you know, and from film to digital. I've seen a lot of transitions. Also, as an animator, character animator, I'm able to apply a lot of those animation techniques to puppetry as well, which is another aspect that I can bring into it. So I want this to be a global thing, you know. I want to be able to light a spark in people globally so they can really kind of tell their stories, you know, whether it's – and it can be any kind of puppets. It doesn't have to be, you know, not necessarily Muppet-style things. In fact, I encourage people to find their own looks and styles and techniques. But that's just a very good starting point, I think. You know, I'm fascinated with the idea of tabletop puppets, rod puppets, Bunraku style, even shadow puppets too. But there are a lot of techniques that can be used to artistically tell a story. And there's a lot of materials and other designs that haven't even been done yet. Not everything's been done, and that to me is really exciting. So that's sort of where I'm headed with all this, basically, is just kind of opening up a dialogue and enabling as many people as possible to join in on this wonderful art form that I think the world needs right now. So that's it.
So you want to be the spark that lights the fire that gets people to secretsofpuppetry.com?
Yes, something like that. The spark, which is also another theme of The Last Jedi, interestingly enough.
Joel, I know that you're with Plumbing with the Death Star. Great show. Love it. Anything you want to plug before we go?
Well, yeah, pretty much just check out Plumbing the Death Star. It's a podcast which isn't necessarily Star Wars based. It's we answer questions that we don't think that movies or TV shows necessarily answer about themselves. So an example would be, who does the plumbing on the Death Star? Which, funnily enough, Force Awakens kind of did touch on, because it works in Sanitary. So thanks, J.J. Abrams, for that accidental shout-out, I guess.
Yeah. Love it.
All right, so for Mike, Brian, Joel, and Adam, this is us saying goodbye, and may the Force be with you.
Exactly, and it probably will be, won't it? I mean, we got this far, didn't we? So thank you very much. Thank you, everybody. Yeah, that was fun.
Luke, repair what they grow beyond. That is the true burden of all masters.
Yeah.